Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today I'd like to start with this. A house divided against itself cannot stand. Abraham Lincoln, 1854. Lincoln was running for Senate when he so eloquently decried an America divided over the repugnance of slavery. And yes, that was more than a century and a half ago. But the truth remains. Today, it's the party of Lincoln that is the house divided against itself, both at the national level and perhaps even here in Massachusetts. Donald Trump won nearly 50% of the vote in the Massachusetts Republican primary yesterday. It was the highest turnout ever in a GOP primary here. And to quote a little more from Lincoln in 1854, "I do not expect the House to fall, but I do expect it will cease to be divided. It will become all one thing or all the other." So, which one will it be? Joining us now to discuss, Boston Globe political reporter Jim O'Sullivan. Jim, it's great to have you back on the show.
Hi, Meghna. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. So, I want to ask you a question about sort of the Massachusetts GOP writ large, but we should actually start today by talking about what Governor Charlie Baker said. He'd, of course, endorsed New Jersey Governor Chris Christie right before the New Hampshire primary, but today he finally said clearly he will not vote for Donald Trump if Trump becomes the Republican nominee. He didn't say much more than that. What do you think of Governor Baker saying that today?
Well, I add one more Abraham Lincoln quote. Lincoln famously said that he was clothed with immense power. I think we've seen that Governor Baker, when it comes to Republican intra-party politics, is not clothed with immense power, because he came out a couple days before the New Hampshire primary and endorsed Chris Christie. Christie famously crashed and burned in that primary and a few days later dropped out of the race. Baker made it pretty clear that he didn't want Donald Trump to win Massachusetts. And Trump took, as you said, nearly 50% of the vote. So what you see is a pretty stark divide between the Republican establishment here and the Republican grassroots, which went big time for Trump. I mean, the map is astonishing. He won almost every town. There's a small ribbon of Metro West suburbs that went for John Kasich and a handful of towns here and there. But Trump dominated here.
Yeah. I mean, this seems like a potential leadership opportunity for Governor Baker to, you know, speak more forcefully with whatever opinion he actually has of the moment, but he doesn't seem to be doing that. He's still holding back a little. I mean, is it because of this divide that the Mass GOP is still trying to figure out between, as you said, the leadership and the grassroots in the state?
Certainly. And I think it's significant that he waited until the day after the state voted to say that he would not vote for Trump in November. You know, we've been asking him this since really the middle of last year. Look, Donald Trump is not Charlie Baker's brand of Republican. I don't think anybody would claim that he is. But Baker, I think, is sort of a microcosm of the National Republican Party, which knows it doesn't want Donald Trump to be its standard bearer because it's afraid that he'll turn off moderate voters, female voters, minority voters, because of the divisive things that he says. But they really haven't been able to coalesce, and it's not just get behind one candidate. It's really put together a Stop Trump plan. Every few weeks you'll hear about top donors meeting and saying they're going to put this, you know, XYZ super PAC together to stop him, or they're going to try and get behind one candidate. It hasn't happened.
Mm-hmm.
He's really flummoxed the establishment Republicans across the country.
Flummoxed is the word, Jim, absolutely. So let me ask you, yesterday the Massachusetts Republican Party put out a remarkable press release, I have to say, because it basically talked about the race last night, or the primary last night, and it talked about the excitement and energy amongst Massachusetts Republicans. But then it also went on to talking about looking forward to November and beating Hillary Clinton, who's not yet the Democratic nominee. But through the whole press release, it failed to mention Donald Trump's name even once. I mean, what's the significance of that?
Right. Well, that's just another sign that, that there was a sort of on the grassroots level, there was a party fight last night. Baker and the state GOP apparatus were trying to wrest control, more control of the state party, of the state committee, from some of those more conservative activists. And they're not happy with the governor. He probably would not have been their first choice in 2014. A little bit too liberal for them, a little bit too ideologically moderate for them. And these are folks who are, you know, they make up the town committees. They do not have access to the levers of power on Beacon Hill for the most part. But they think that Baker compromised too much in reaching out to independents and moderates successfully, I might add, in 2014 when he beat Martha Coakley. So you see, not just at the presidential level with Trump sort of picking off all these party power brokers, but at the very grassroots, precinct by precinct level, a lot of dissatisfaction, arrestiveness, really, in that party space.
Yeah. Well, Jim O'Sullivan is politics reporter for the Boston Globe. Jim, it's always great to talk with you. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
And listeners, we want to hear from you. What do you think this moment means for the Massachusetts Republican Party? Do you think it's a chance for the Mass GOP to shift, to refocus, to recapture voters that it had lost in the 90s or through the 2000s? I mean, look at that enormous GOP turnout in the primary yesterday. That included independents and, as we've been hearing over the course of the past couple of weeks, Democrats that may have left the Democratic Party in Massachusetts. So what's your take? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Or you can send us a tweet at Radio Boston. Well, let's turn now to a couple other voices, including Todd Domke. He's Republican political analyst for WBUR. Todd, it's great to have you.
Good to be with you, Magna.
Also with us is Greg Casey, former chief of staff for Senator Scott Brown. He currently supports Senator Marco Rubio. Greg Casey, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks, Megan. Great to be with you.
It's great to have both of you. Todd, let me just start with you. I mean, we heard you do a valiant job last night and this morning with all the Super Tuesday news. But, you know, piggyback off what Jim O'Sullivan was saying, where do you see the Mass GOP as a party right now?
Well, it's barely a party. Let's start with that. I mean, it was marginalized before, and the fact that we have only Charlie Baker in power, basically. And as you point out from that press release from the state party, it's not as if there's any party leadership to speak of. So a lot of people, not just conservatives, but also moderates in the party are, of course, disappointed that Charlie Baker didn't do anything to take on Trump. I mean, he did the most expedient thing early by being neutral. Then he did the next most expedient thing by endorsing Christie right before the New Hampshire primary, knowing that he would not only lose, but then quickly be out of the race, mm-hmm. so Baker could go back to neutrality. Then he did the next expedient thing by trying to stay neutral again all the way through the primary, then waits till the day of the primary to say he actually did not vote for Trump. And then today he then allows that, oh, and he won't vote for Trump if he's the nominee. So, you know, he was not exactly a profile of courage here because with his popularity, he could have said, okay, here's the anti-Trump in the Massachusetts primary that I am supporting, Marco Rubio or John Kasich,
right?
Because both of them were virtually tied, you know, here, and no one could get behind an anti-Trump candidate. They didn't know who to get behind, really. So if Baker had months ago acted like a leader, and not just, you know, a partisan leader, but a leader for the country in trying to stop Trump, then he could have made a difference. It would have been a contest. The candidate, whoever he endorsed, would have then come and campaigned here. Instead, we had this crazy situation where there was no real contest. And I don't remember any Massachusetts primary election where there hasn't been a contest like this. And a lot of it, frankly, is I blame the media. There was hardly any coverage, and the media let Baker get away with it. The media in this state are so supportive and protective of Charlie Baker, and that's fine. I'm glad he's popular. But they didn't do him any favors by not pressing him to be more explicit early on about Trump. So even with the KKK comments and all the rest, for Charlie Baker to act as if he's still shouldn't have anything to say about it, that's kind of a dereliction of duty. You know, so last time he had to learn how to be a candidate, Dan Payne has pointed out. He had to learn how to run for governor. Now he needs to learn how to act like
right.
a governor.
Todd, let me just jump in here, if I may. I'm sorry to cut you off there, but I want to. Okay. You've said a lot of really interesting stuff, and I want to get Greg Casey's thoughts on it. I mean,
sure.
Greg, Todd's making a bunch of really strong points here, and I just want to add my two cents that, like, you know, Governor Baker is the most popular governor in America right now, vis-a-vis his approval ratings here in Massachusetts. He's got an enormous amount of political capital, and I would suppose even amongst the people who voted in the GOP primary for Donald Trump yesterday. I mean, what do you think of what Tom's saying about why Governor Baker, you know, isn't seizing this moment more forcefully?
Well, let's look at the reason why he's so popular. He's so popular because people respect the fact that he's a very pragmatic leader. He rolls his sleeves up and takes on local problems, local issues, not the big sexy issues, the national issues, the controversial issues. That's why people like him. That's what he's good at. And also, I think maybe people, the media or others, may be holding him to a very, very different standard. He's not like Deval Patrick. Deval Patrick was very much a political creature. And Mitt Romney, obviously, was more of a political creature because those folks had very different aspirations. I think you really need to look at Charlie Baker as in a very different lens. He's not like that. Politics mm-hmm. isn't really something that comes as naturally to him. He's as I said, he's kind of a nuts and bolts leader. He gets to the root of the problem. And I think the political issues and the different machinations that other governors have faced, that's an annoyance to him. And it's something that can be a distraction for
right.
him as well.
Well, in fact, as he said today, he believes that the people of Massachusetts voted him into office to do a job, and he's got to get back to doing that job.
Absolutely, and he is so focused on that. And just to pivot a little bit back to more what Jim O'Sullivan was saying, talking about the wrestling the state committee back to people who are his choices. That's mainly because of he wants people who are loyal to him. It's not an ideological thing for Charlie. Charlie wants people who are going to be supportive of him, supportive of his agenda, and some of those people might be more conservative than Charlie, some mm-hmm. of them may not. But the fact is, at the end of the day, they want Charlie as governor.
Yeah.
As I always tell people, I've never met a politician ever that I agree with 100% of the time. People need to get over that. And some of the people who Charlie opposed were people who could not fathom having a governor that they didn't agree with 100%.
Well, let me turn back to Todd here for a second, because I want to talk about the fact that perhaps the passivity, if I can use that term, of Governor Baker regarding this political moment stands in pretty stark opposition to the activity or the energy of the people who went to the polls yesterday. I mean, because we were looking at some of the numbers, and the state doesn't actually keep track of how many unenrolled voters pull which ticket, Republican or Democrat, but some numbers we got, there are more than 460,000 registered Republicans in Massachusetts, and more than 600,000 voted in the Republican primary yesterday. So obviously very safe to say a large number of independent voters pulled a Republican ticket, and 50% of them voted for Donald Trump. So first of all, regarding that huge turnout, you know, what do you think that means, not so much for Trump, but for the Massachusetts Republican Party?
Well, it's not a good sign, frankly, that many who would come in for Trump are, you know, not inclined to be constructive for the Republican Party. But here's the thing with Baker. I understand a lot of his popularity is that he's nonpartisan, but he was very active in trying to get elected members of the Republican State Committee so he could control it.
Right.
Now, he's a good governor. I voted for him. I'll vote for him again. I think he's a great governor, actually. But it's more than being a manager. You also have to be a leader. You start off quoting Abraham Lincoln about House Divided. And he was a savvy politician. Sometimes your conscience has to be your guide. Baker tried to avoid taking any risk. He did the expedient thing. But sometimes not taking any risk it comes back to haunt you. He didn't want to turn off Democrats and moderates and getting involved in the Republican Party. Later, he will have to answer, if Trump is the nominee, why didn't you do more to oppose him? Why didn't you do anything to oppose him?
Mm-hmm.
So he might be in a position later of deciding, you know, I'm not really a Republican.
Right.
So then the party loyalists who back him will say, uh-oh, what did we do?
Yeah, well, so Greg Casey, respond to that, because, it, you know, Todd says something that makes me wonder, and perhaps this is too extreme, but I got to put it out there. I mean, Massachusetts Republicans have been often been identified as a special brand, if not a dying brand of fiscally conservative, socially progressive Republicans. I mean, is that brand changing? Could we reach a point where Charlie Baker is forced into a corner and say, I'm not a Republican anymore?
I can't imagine Charlie ever saying that. Also, this whole thing isn't over yet. I think you never know what's going to happen between now and election time. Believe it or not, the election, it's almost a lifetime away. People are today just kind of waiting for all the dust to settle before they see where they end up. But just to get back to a little bit of what Todd was saying, I really do think that instead of judging Governor Baker by his political courage when it comes to endorsing or getting behind certain candidates, I think much more something else that really resonates is his political courage when it comes to taking on reforming the MBTA and fighting the battles inside the state house, not on the campaign trail. That's what really resonates with people, and I think that's why people will stick by him. And I don't think they necessarily have to look at the governor to make up their mind on who they're going to run, who they're going to support for president.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I know anybody who made up their mind in this primary by judging by who Baker happened to choose. They were probably with Christie beforehand, and Baker's support did nothing.
Well, I want to actually play a little tape here and then save just enough time to get to a call or two, because, a little earlier today we talked to Senate Minority Leader Bruce Tarr. Now, he's, of course, endorsed Ohio Governor John Kasich, but he talked to us about the moment that he sees or the significance of the moment that he sees for the Massachusetts GOP. And for just some context, exit polling from last night showed that voters who consider themselves moderate, somewhat conservative, and very conservative, so a wide spectrum there, all backed Donald Trump by a wide margin in the GOP primary in Massachusetts yesterday. So that's one of the things that definitely surprised Senator Bruce Tarr. And he said, but in addition, there is an opportunity for the GOP in Massachusetts. And here's what he said.
We need to better understand who the Trump Republican is, and there are indications that a lot of folks yesterday who were independents and Democrats or had previously been Democrats were voting in the Republican primary. So I think it presents a real opportunity to try to retain those people who were voting in the primary yesterday that don't normally vote in Republican primaries. But first of all, we need to know who they are, and second of all, we need to know what issues they're interested in. And I think that's a worthwhile exercise given the volume of people that seem to be in that category.
Todd, respond to that.
We can think that the future of the party rests with this small fraction of people who voted for Trump for the Republican primary in this state, or we can get real about the fact that the majority in this state will not like the idea of the Republican Party being identified by a nominee if Trump is the nominee. And I hope, like Greg Casey said, that he isn't, and it's too soon to say he will be. But a candidate who could not bring himself to condemn the KKK, who quotes Mussolini, who degrades women, who's fracturing the party. If this party is identified with Trump, and that's what the liberals and many in the media will do, they will say, okay, are you with Trump or not? Then this party has no real future in this state if it is seen as the party of Trump.
Mm. Greg, go ahead. Jump in here.
Yeah, well, I've been thinking about this a lot, and I really think that people, even though they don't identify with the man, I think most people, even Trump's biggest supporters that I know, they really don't like him personally. They think he's arrogant and everything else that you can think of. But his message does resonate. And when I say his message, I'm not talking about the remarks that can be construed as offensive or insensitive at best, but just the fact that he is so different than the status quo. He's willing to attack or take on anybody. And I think one of the first prime example I saw of this, which wasn't so much Trump as it was Cruz, but on that debate that CNBC did, where the questions were just purely just to create drama among
right.
the candidates, and those guys, they took on the media. And I think that was something that really resonated with everybody, of every demographic, even my friends who are staunch Democrats. They said, you know, they got a really good point. It's about time that people at least be honest and upfront that this is real. This isn't a political theater. And I think that's something that, that Trump, here's a guy who's a master of theater, he seems to be kind of the antidote for that in some people's minds.
Yeah.
But the other thing I just want to mention real
quick
is that I think it's to people's folly to assume that there is a very simple following for the Trump campaign or his supporters. You can't really marginalize them. I was in a cab about 2 weeks ago, and the cab driver was a Haitian immigrant who recently became a citizen, and I asked him, just out of curiosity, who he was supporting. And he was supporting Trump. I was floored.
Mm-hmm.
And you just look at it, where Trump won all the different demographics. So I'm scratching my head. I wish I understood what it was, but I think Senator Tarr was absolutely right. We need to find out what exactly it is that people are find interesting or are enthused by this.
Well, let's ask some people themselves who've called in and are very, very patiently waiting here. So I want to just roll through just a couple quick calls if I can. Angela is calling from Medford. You're on the air, Angela. Thanks for waiting.
Thank you for hearing me. I think the whole Republican Party is kind of off base for blaming the media or the governors, like our own governor. I think the problem is their inability. Once we voted them in, we had problems before, but once we voted all these Republicans in, we expected them to do something, and they turned out to be do-nothings. I think they messed up so badly. They can't get along with each other. How are they going to get along with Democrats?
Mm-hmm.
You know, their failure to really recognize what the problems are out there. For example, the Social Security recipients and those with government annuities ended up in the last 3 years making less or getting less take-home pay than they did 3 years ago.
Right. It's one terrific example, Angela. Angela, forgive me for cutting you off there. I don't want to have to, but I'm going to. But I appreciate your example and your call. I want to move quickly to John from Lynn, if I can. You're on the air, John.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say I think Trump has changed the face of the Republican Party, and a lot of mainstream Republicans or moderate Republicans are going to have to make a choice at some point, whether or not they're going to go with the Trump Republican Party or break off, frankly, into who knows what. But this could be the end of the modern Republican Party. I mean, it's changed before. It changed with Roosevelt back in history when he took the progressive wing of the Republican Party with him. And it can change again, and I think we're seeing it now.
John, thank you so much for your call. Todd and Greg, we've just got about a minute and a half to go here, so I'm going to give you both a final chance to give us your thoughts on where Massachusetts and the Mass GOP stand today as we look forward to the rest of the primary season and then November. Greg, let's start with you.
Well, as I said before, I think right now the dust is still settling. But I think at the end of the day, I think the Republicans in Massachusetts will support their nominee. But it's much bigger than that. As we talked about before, and Todd mentioned, the Republicans are only about 14% of the electorate. So we're not talking about a huge group of folks. What we're talking about is the movement, more the conservative movement. And it's a question of whether we can actually harness those folks, those independents who picked a Republican ballot yesterday, and see what their issues are and how to hold on to them.
Todd, Greg sounds a little more optimistic than you've been sounding about the future viability of the Republican Party if Donald Trump continues to be a strong candidate.
Yes, I'm optimistic if Trump is not the nominee, but right now Trump has been fracturing the party. It will continue to split apart if he is the nominee. Many conservatives, not just moderates, are saying that they will not vote for Trump under any circumstances. So this could be a case where, you know, the Republican apparatus, you know, can rationalize, oh yes, this is a good thing, but it is not. We have to be the party of Lincoln, not the party of a demagogue who would appeal to hatred and fear.
Well, Todd Domke is a Republican political analyst for WBUR. Closing where we began, with President Lincoln and his 1854 speech when he was running for Senate then, about a house divided against itself cannot stand. Todd, great to have you on the show. Thanks so much.
Good to be with you.
Greg Casey, former chief of staff for Senator Scott Brown. Greg, it was delightful to have you on the program. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, Magna. Take care.
And listeners, keep your thoughts coming about the Massachusetts GOP, where it is now, where it'll be tomorrow, where you'd like to see it go. Send us your thoughts. We're at Radio Boston on Twitter. I'm Magna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.